If you're still breathing, the story isn't over, and you don't owe your suffering a sequel.
Wow. Yeah, that's a really powerful way to start.
Right. It's just this incredibly profound perspective on human resilience. And it comes from author Clint Matheny. And, you know, that quote really serves as the absolute foundation for our deep dive today. Our mission for you listening right now is to unpack Matheny's really comprehensive guide. It's titled Healing PTSD, Phobias, and Other Intense Emotional Feelings.
And it is a fascinating read, truly.
It really is. We're going to explore how the human brain actually processes bad memories. And, I mean, more importantly, how to overcome intense emotional distress using methods that might fundamentally challenge everything you assume about therapy.
Yeah. Matheny's work really does force a pretty massive perspective shift. Because if you think about, you know, the cultural narrative we've all absorbed, mostly from movies and television, mental health treatment usually looks one specific way.
Yeah, lying on a couch, right?
Yeah. Exactly. It involves years of sitting on a therapist's couch, agonizingly recounting every single detail of your most painful experiences. But his guide focuses on highly effective, really rapid treatments that bypass that traditional method of, you know, talking it out entirely.
Okay, let's unpack this, because before we can get into how these rapid treatments actually work, we have to properly define what the problem even is.
Right. Which sounds basic, but it's not.
Not at all. Matheny starts by redefining a word we use all the time, trauma. Like, in everyday conversation, we tend to use trauma to describe a terrible event itself.
Yes, like people say it all the time.
Right. Someone might say that car crash was a massive trauma.
Mm.
But Matheny clarifies that a trauma is not an experience.
Mm.
It is an emotional response to an experience.
And that distinction changes literally everything about how we approach healing. Because if the trauma is the event itself, well, you're stuck.
Yeah, you can't build a time machine.
Exactly. You cannot change history. But by defining trauma as the emotional response, we acknowledge its subjective nature. A trauma is essentially a moment where your nervous system is so profoundly upset that it becomes completely overwhelmed.
Okay.
And because it's a response rather than an objective historical fact, what causes trauma for one person might not cause it for another person at all.
I mean, it depends entirely on our unique past emotional experiences, right? And just how our individual nervous systems are wired.
Precisely.
You could have two people sitting right next to each other going through the exact same terrifying event, say a really bad turbulence on a flight.
Okay, yeah, great example.
One person might process the adrenaline,
shake
it off once they land, and eventually just move forward. They're fine.
Right.
But the other person might develop post-traumatic stress disorder or severe depression, which, by the way, Matheny notes, can also be rooted in trauma.
Mm-hmm.
The objective reality of the event was identical for both of them in that plane. But the emotional response, the actual trauma, is entirely subjective.
What's fascinating here is that understanding that subjective response leads us directly into how a traumatic memory functions in the brain, because it is functionally very different from, like, a normal everyday memory of what you had for breakfast.
Oh, completely.
Matheny uses a very evocative analogy to explain this. He compares a traumatic memory to having one of those falling dreams. You know the ones.
Oh, yes. Where you jolt awake right before you hit the ground.
Exactly. The traumatic memory freezes the most terrible moment of the experience just before the impact happens. The brain essentially takes that peak moment of sheer terror and just locks it into place.
It's kind of like, think of your brain as a computer streaming a video of your life.
Oh, I like that.
Most days, the video plays smoothly.
Yeah.
But during a traumatic event, right at the absolute worst, most terrifying split second of the footage, the computer glitches.
Yes.
It gets permanently stuck buffering. Over and over again, it just keeps attempting to load that one horrific microsecond.
And it never resolves.
Huh. Right. It never moves to the next scene where the threat passes and you realize you survived. Your brain just buffers that split second of panic endlessly.
Framing it as a buffering glitch is incredibly helpful for understanding the patient's daily reality, because the brain keeps replaying this frozen, unresolved moment whenever that memory is triggered.
And sometimes that happens completely unconsciously, right?
Yeah, manifesting as just unexplained anxiety or avoidance behaviors. But when it happens consciously, we call those flashbacks.
Right.
And Matheny isn't just speaking from, you know, clinical observation here. He writes from deeply personal experience. He suffered from these exact types of debilitating flashbacks for over 12 years.
12 years. Wow.
Yeah.
12 years of your nervous system being stuck on that buffering screen. That sounds like absolute agony.
It is a profound level of suffering. But, and this is the hopeful part, defining trauma as a frozen response rather than a historical event gives us a very clear, actionable goal.
Because you aren't trying to change the past.
Exactly. The objective of therapy isn't to somehow rewrite your history or erase the factual memory of what happened. The goal is simply to unfreeze the brain's present state. You are trying to hit the refresh button on that buffering computer so the video can finally just finish playing.
Which makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
But if the brain is just stuck buffering, why does the traditional method of talking it out so often fail to hit that refresh button?
That is the million-dollar question.
Because this leads directly into Matheny's sharp critique of the modern mental health industry. He points out that over the past 30 years, massive strides have been made in effectively treating PTSD, phobias, and these intense emotional states.
Real scientific strides.
Right. And doing it without medications, without electroshock treatments, and without medical operations. And this is a big step. But finding a therapist who actually uses these modern effective treatments is a completely different story.
It really is. The landscape of mental health care has shifted so dramatically, and most people aren't aware of the mechanics behind the scenes.
Yeah, like what's actually happening in the industry.
Exactly. For instance, Matheny notes a striking statistic. Less than 10% of psychiatrists actually do psychotherapy anymore.
Less than 10%.
Yeah. Most psychiatrists today have transitioned into what he calls psychopharmacologists.
Right, meaning they mainly just prescribe and manage medications.
Exactly. As Matheny puts it, the old cultural term shrink really shouldn't even apply to them anymore.
So if you're looking for actual psychotherapy, you listening, Matheny notes you're generally looking for psychologists or, you know, professionals with a whole alphabet soup of letters after their names.
Right. The LCSWs, the LPCs.
Licensed clinical social workers, professional counselors. And he points out there are hundreds of different therapies practiced in the U.S. by over 300,000 practicing therapists.
Such a huge field.
But here is the kicker. And this blew my mind. He states that psychotherapy is an art, not a science.
Yeah.
It might present itself as a rigorous science, but when practiced on unique human beings, it is an art form.
And that subjective, artistic nature means that people who are desperately seeking help are essentially rolling the dice.
That's a scary thought.
It is. They are paying money and spending time hoping they happen to find a practitioner whose specific art actually works for their specific frozen memory.
To combat that uncertainty, Matheny offers a rule of thumb for dealing with licensed psychotherapists that is, honestly, it's quite radical.
Very radical.
He calls it the four-session rule.
Yeah.
He advises that if you are seeing a professional and your one particular trauma or flashback isn't drastically improved, if not entirely healed in four sessions, you should look for another therapist.
In an industry where open-ended, years-long treatment plans are often the baseline expectation, telling a patient to walk away after a month is a highly disruptive piece of advice.
I have to push back on this on behalf of you listening, though, because that rule sounds incredibly impatient.
I get that.
Right. Society constantly tells us that doing the work on our mental health is supposed to be a long, grueling process. We expect to spend years unpacking our childhoods.
Yeah.
Given that cultural expectation, giving up on a trained, licensed therapist after just four sessions feels like you're asking for a magic wand.
This raises an important question, though. It does challenge our cultural assumptions, but Matheny explicitly questions why we assume healing has to take years.
Right. Who made that rule?
Exactly.
Yeah.
He calls out old talk therapies, traditional psychoanalysis, cognitive behavioral therapy, 12-step programs. He also specifically calls out flooding therapies, like prolonged exposure therapy, which he notes is very appropriately named.
Prolonged. Yeah.
He argues that these older methods require far too many painful sessions and that half the time they are a complete waste of time and money when dealing with PTSD.
A 50% failure rate is staggering when you consider the financial and emotional cost of those sessions.
But the financial cost is only secondary to his main critique. Matheny argues these old therapies can actually be actively harmful to the client.
Wow. Harmful.
Yes. And this directly answers your question about patients. Think back to your buffering computer analogy. If the core problem is that the nervous system is frozen in the absolute worst millisecond of terror, forcing a patient to verbally relive that narrative, detail by detail, doesn't unfreeze the computer.
Oh, I see. It just keeps triggering the freeze. Every time you tell the story, you're just clicking on the corrupted file again.
Precisely. By forcing the patient to repeatedly relive the trauma, these older therapies often cement the frozen memory even deeper into the nervous system.
Because the brain thinks it's happening all over again.
Yes. The neural pathways associated with that panic actually grow stronger. So staying in an ineffective therapy isn't just a matter of being slow to heal. It is potentially deepening the wound.
That is tragic.
And the ultimate tragedy, as Matheny points out, is the fallout from this failure. Because these therapies take too long, cost too much, or fail entirely, many people resort to prescription drugs from their medical doctors.
Or they turn to self-medicating.
Right. Illegal drugs and alcohol just to cope with their debilitating emotions.
Yeah.
They give up on resolving the trauma and settle for numbing it.
I have to stop you there because this is where Matheny introduces his alternative, and it sounds almost too good to be true.
It really does sound like sci-fi at first.
We are moving from the problem to what he calls the biggest psychotherapy breakthrough of the 21st century, memory reconsolidation therapies.
Yes.
He lists 8 different trauma healing procedures that utilize this breakthrough. And the defining feature of all of them, the absolute mind-blowing part, is that none of them require you to talk about your traumatic memory in order to heal.
This is the no-talk revolution in mental health.
Yeah.
It completely upends the expectation that you have to articulate the unspeakable details of your worst moments to a stranger in order to get past them.
Which is such a relief.
Matheny explicitly tells his readers to forget the television dramas about psychotherapy. Because you aren't spending hours and hours talking through the historical narrative of what happened, healing a specific phobia or flashback can take minutes rather than years.
Wait, okay, healing a 12-year phobia in minutes without talking about it, it sounds like a late-night infomercial.
I know.
How is that scientifically or physiologically possible? How do you heal a memory without talking about the memory?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we can understand the mechanism, and we can actually extend your computer analogy to do it.
Okay, let's do it.
Let's call this the save as function of the brain.
The save as function, okay.
Memory reconsolidation works by altering the nervous system's physical reaction to the memory, essentially severing the emotional panic from the historical facts. Normally, when you recall a traumatic memory, your brain opens the file and the overwhelming panic opens right along with it.
Right.
It just floods your amygdala, which is the brain's threat center.
Right. So the file opens and the computer immediately starts buffering the glitch. The panic is attached to the file.
Exactly. But memory reconsolidation therapies introduce a very specific disruption. During a session, the therapist will have you bring up the physical feeling of the distress.
Just the feeling, not the story.
Not the story, just the feeling. And while you're holding that feeling, they simultaneously introduce a distracting sensory input or cognitive task.
Like what?
For example, some therapies use specific eye movements or tapping or having you count backward in a really complex way. By occupying your brain's working memory with this new, safe task, the amygdala cannot fully launch its panic response.
Here's where it gets really interesting. So you are essentially tricking the brain.
Yes.
You are holding the memory file open, but you are keeping the panic center too distracted to attach the terror back onto it.
Yes. And that is where the save as moment happens. The brain eventually has to put the memory away. But because the panic response was successfully blocked or diluted by the distraction, the memory gets saved back into your neural hard drive in a new modified format.
Wow.
The memory reconsolidates. You still remember the historical facts of the event. I mean, these therapies do not give you amnesia.
Sure.
But the nervous system is no longer tricked into thinking the event is happening right now. The emotional terror is severed from the factual history.
So the video finally finishes playing, the buffering stops, and your brain registers that the threat is actually over and you are safe in the present moment.
Exactly.
That mechanism makes so much more sense than just hoping a lifetime of talking will eventually wear the memory down. Let's actually list a few of these specific procedures Matheny provides, so you listening have them on your radar if you want to look into them.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
He mentions the flash technique, brain spotting, the havening technique, and something called RTM, which stands for Reconsolidation of Traumatic Memories.
He also lists progressive counting, specifically the calming backward counting version we just alluded to,
right,
along with the dynamic spin procedure, eye movement integration, and free spotting.
It's quite a list.
It is. Mm-hmm. And he offers a specific recommendation for any therapists or facilitators out there who might be listening and looking to improve their practice. Alongside methods like brain spotting and the flash technique, he highly recommends learning something called clean language.
Clean language, what is that?
Clean language is a specific method of asking questions. It helps a client explore their own internal metaphors without the therapist accidentally imposing their own assumptions or interpretations onto the client's experience.
Oh, that's brilliant. It's an incredible toolkit.
Right.
But Matheny offers some very crucial advice for anyone looking to utilize these procedures, right?
Yes, very important caveats.
First, he emphasizes that trauma treatment is absolutely not one size fits all. Our nervous systems are unique.
Mm-hmm.
If you try one of these reconsolidation procedures and it doesn't work for you, he urges you not to give up on the concept.
Yeah.
You simply move on and experience the others.
Right, because it's about finding the right key for your specific lock. He notes it would be highly unusual for all 8 of these techniques to be ineffective for a single person.
Makes sense.
His second piece of crucial advice is regarding safety and pacing. He strongly suggests testing these techniques on a mildly unpleasant emotional feeling first.
Like, don't jump into the deep end right away.
Exactly. If you are learning one of these techniques to use on yourself, do not jump straight into your deepest, darkest trauma. Read the instructions, watch the materials, and test it out on a minor annoyance or a small frustration.
Just to see how your brain and body respond to the reconsolidation process.
Yes.
It's like, take the car for a test drive around an empty parking lot before you take it on the highway.
Perfect analogy.
I think that's incredibly smart. And it's important to recognize the sheer scope of what these techniques can potentially address. Because we aren't just talking about daytime triggers.
No, not at all.
Matheny points out a staggering statistic. 9 out of 10 people with PTSD also suffer from PTSD nightmares.
9 out of 10.
These frozen memories aren't just disrupting their waking lives, they are completely destroying their ability to rest and recover at night.
And the deprivation of safe sleep compounds literally every other symptom of trauma. It makes everything worse.
Of course.
But Matheny emphasizes that these nightmares, too, are highly treatable using these modern reconsolidation methods.
That's amazing.
It is. By unfreezing the daytime triggers, the unconscious processing that happens during sleep also begins to resolve.
He really created this guide to democratize this information, didn't he? To help both those who might not have the financial resources for endless years of traditional therapy and for therapists looking for faster, safer ways to treat their clients.
Absolutely. That's his core mission.
But we do need to deliver Matheny's disclaimer here. Because dealing with intense emotional states is not something to be taken lightly.
No, it's not. And Matheny is explicit about this. Before participating in any of these recommendations, you should consult with a physician or a qualified mental health provider.
Right.
Furthermore, if you choose to use this material for your own recovery or for another's recovery, if you are acting as a facilitator, you are accepting full responsibility for your own actions.
Taking responsibility for your nervous system's recovery is serious business.
Very serious. And Matheny makes it clear he is absolved of any liability for repercussions. These memory reconsolidation tools are powerful, and they need to be respected and used with care.
So what does this all mean for you listening? Today, we've challenged the entire cultural narrative around mental health. We learned that trauma isn't the terrible event from your past. It's your brain's present frozen emotional response to it. We learned that endlessly talking about the narrative details in traditional therapy might actually just be picking at the wound, cementing the trauma deeper into your nervous system.
Which is such a paradigm shift.
It really is.
It really is.
And we explored how new no-talk therapies utilizing memory reconsolidation can distract the brain's panic center long enough to save the memory without the terror attached, often in a fraction of the time.
Yeah.
What this means is actual empowerment. It means you don't have to just cope with debilitating emotions or settle for numbing yourself. Rapid, deep healing is physiologically possible. You do not have to live your life permanently stuck on that buffering screen.
Which leaves us with a provocative thought to mull over. We have built an entire cultural identity around the idea that healing has to hurt.
We really have.
We romantically celebrate the struggle, the years of painful processing, the tears shed while analyzing our past. But if we fully embrace Matheny's premise that emotional pain can be dissolved quickly, and often painlessly, without endlessly re-traumatizing ourselves by reciting the narrative, how much of our own suffering are we currently holding on to simply because we think we are supposed to?
Wow.
If the brain is just waiting for the right input to stop buffering, maybe it's time we finally give ourselves permission to hit refresh.